All right. So Job chapter 27. In other words, it's rare for David Vernon to get a hold of me and say, I want this message online.
And
yeah, One Soul at a Time, under Living Waters Baptist Church, you'll find his latest message. All right, so Job chapter 27, Job is going to start what's called a soliloquy. All right, that's where, you know, one actor speaks for a long time. Of course, he's not acting. But we'll also notice is, moreover, Job continued his parable and said. So what he's saying here, he's really giving you his complaint, but he's also letting you know it's also a parable. Why? Because he's a picture of the suffering of Jesus Christ, cast out by his own people, forsaken by the Father. All right, so there's a parable in this as well as Job's suffering. All right, so here's what Job says in verse 2. As God liveth, who hath taken away my judgment, and the Almighty who hath vexed my soul. Now, right off the bat, God took away my judgment. What's that mean? He's not being fair with me. Okay? He took away my judgment. He's not being fair with me. Okay? And this is later on why Elihu's going to be upset with Job, and God's definitely upset with Job. Then he goes on and he says this, verse 3, all the while my breath is in me and the Spirit of God is in my nostrils, my lips shall not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. Well, you've just done it, Job. All right? God forbid that I should justify you. Till I die, I will not remove mine integrity from me. All right. So, what's going on here? His friends have just told him he's a very wicked man. And he's saying, I'm not about to get rid of my integrity. I'm not going to justify you and say I'm wicked. Okay? In other words, I'm not going to agree with you. All right. It says, verse 6, my righteousness I hold fast. Now, how's that for self-righteousness? All right? And I will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach me so long as I live. In other words, I'm not going to change my mind. You're not going to get me to do it. All right? Now, later on, God gets him to change his mind. Thank God that, you know, God's gracious.
Pastor, is that... I've heard so many people say that they don't know why Job was hung out to dry for this whole thing where we God starting in there. But we see men of God many times having to bear Christ's light to other people so people can see it. Well, he's doing the same thing, demonstrating the suffering of Christ. He just didn't know it at the time.
No, he did not know it at the time that he's doing that. And if you keep in mind what Peter said, that they not being able to see the end of these things, all right, they often prophesy without really understanding what they're doing, okay? All right, so the thing is, verse 7, let mine enemy be as the wicked, and he that riseth up against me as the unrighteous. So he's saying, hey, if you're my enemy, I hope everything that happens to unrighteous people happens to you, okay? For what is the hope of the hypocrite, though he hath gain when God taketh away his soul? Okay? So if a person's a hypocrite and God takes his soul away, what did he gain out of it being a hypocrite? He didn't gain anything. Will God hear his cry when trouble cometh upon him? And it actually says in the Proverbs, and it says again in Psalm 2, that God laughs at that time, okay? Then will he, you know, they'll call upon me and I'll laugh at them at that time. All right. Will he delight himself, verse 10, in the Almighty? Will he always call upon God? Verse 11, I will teach you by the hand of God, that which is with the Almighty will I not conceal. He says, look, you guys have talked, I'm going to teach you a bit. Okay. Behold, all ye yourselves have seen it. Why then are you thus altogether vain? This is the portion of a wicked man with God and the heritage of oppressors, which they shall receive of the Almighty. So he's saying, look, you've seen what I'm going through. This is what wicked men do. Okay. They've done what you've done. Come in here and just pick on me from this. You know, keep in mind, one of the curses that David puts on his enemies is they speak to the hurt of him that God is oppressed. In other words, you see God doing something to somebody and you put more on top of it. Don't ever do that. If you see somebody that's been your enemy or giving you trouble and you see him getting something that, you know, and you kind of realize, yeah, that's a mourn for that person. Go out of your way not to be somebody throwing stones at them, okay? Go out of your way not to do that. You know, in fact, the psalmist says, when they were sick, I mourned for them, okay? You have that attitude. Don't you be somebody that sees it and grinds more in.
Is that only for someone you see, you know that God's doing it to them? Or, because how do you know?
You know, let's put it this way. Anybody you see going through the comeuppance, just leave them alone. Don't add to their comeuppance. Whether you think God did it, the devil did it, or nature did it, leave it alone. It makes you a better person. If it never affects them, it'll make you a better person to leave it alone and not say anything about it, okay? And people will remember, especially if everyone knows that person did you wrong, and then that person's having a terrible outcome, everyone will think well of you if you mourn for that person and are quiet about it, okay? People will think very well of you. You know, if they end up dying 20 years later, you can tell the story about it, all right? But at that time, leave it alone.
No, I understand, but what I mean is, how do you necessarily, I mean, when you see something bad happening to someone and you don't necessarily know them, how do you know if it's comeuppance or if it's...
Well, I don't. If you don't know them, you don't know at all. If you see something bad happen to somebody, feel bad for that person. Mm-hmm. Especially if you don't know, feel bad for them. Charity thinketh no evil. You don't think, oh, this is an evil thing. What did the? In other words, when Paul stuck his hand in the fire in the island of Melita and he came out with a poison serpent on there, what did everyone think? Ah, he was an evil man. That was their first thought, wasn't it? Okay, don't you do that. All right. So he goes on, he says this, verse 12, behold, all ye yourselves have seen it. Why then are you thus altogether vain? This is the portion of a wicked man with God and the heritage of oppressors, which they shall receive of the Almighty. Okay? People that pick on people who are falling down, God will take care of them. If his children be multiplied, it is for the sword. And his offspring shall not be satisfied with bread. Those that remain of him shall be buried in death, and his widow shall not weep. Though he heap up silver as dust and prepare raiment as the day, he may prepare it, but the just shall put it on and the innocent shall divide the silver. I was reading a story recently of a ship before the Panama Canal of men coming back from California and with bags and bags of gold and got into a terrible shipwreck out in the Atlantic. And there were men who just went down with their gold. They wouldn't let it go. All right. They just couldn't let go of those bags of gold and just sunk with it. And
Pastor, when I read that, I was thinking that that was like something foretelling of somewhat of Jude.
And it could well be, yeah. I think Jude speaks of about that same thing. So yeah, that was a good reference to put that to Jude. The idea of, you know, these men and what they have. He goes on and he says this. He may prepare it, but the just shall put it on and the innocent shall provide the silver. In other words, some rich guy is going to get all this stuff together for himself and then he dies and somebody else is going to wear it. Okay? All right. Verse 18. He buildeth his house as a moth and as a booth that the maker keepeth. The rich man shall lie down, but he shall not be gathered. His openeth his eyes and he is not. Terrors take hold on him as waters, a tempest stealeth him away in the night. The east wind carrieth him away, and he departeth, and as a storm hurleth out of his place. For God shall cast upon him, and not spare. He would fain flee out of his hand. Men shall clap their hands at him, and it shall hiss him out of his place. And you know, when a man really has been very wicked, and he dies, ding dong, the witch is dead. I mean, people do rejoice when a man like that dies. And it's a sorrowful thing, but they do rejoice over it. I think it was Cromwell the archbishop, I think he's the one, who was on a scaffold being ready to be hung when Henry VIII died. Is that? Oh, okay. He was on a scaffold. He'd been his counselor, and they came, well, the king died. Okay, take the rope off his neck. He doesn't have to die. You know, kind of glad Henry VIII died. All right. All right, so going on in 28, he says, surely there is a vein for the silver and a place for the gold where they find it. Iron is taken out of the earth and brass is molten out of the stone. He setteth an end to the darkness and searcheth out all perfection, the stones of darkness and the shadow of death. One of the things Job is, it's often called the science book of the Bible because he talks about these things, just the idea of the natural things. Silver comes in vain, there's a place where gold is, a place where you find iron, and all of those are things, and in the Middle East and in the East beyond that, that were mined and regularly gotten out of the earth in those days. So it says, verse 3, he setteth an end to the darkness and searcheth out all perfection, the stones of darkness and the shadow of death. The flood breaketh out from the inhabitant. Even the waters forgotten of the foot. They are dried up. They are gone away from men. Okay, when was that? He's probably talking about the flood there. Okay, because keep in mind, men of Job's age would have known people who survived the flood. Okay, Noah had been alive in their early age. All right, verse 5. As for the earth, out of it cometh bread, and under it is turned up, as it were, fire. There's one of your places where ancient men knew that the middle of the earth had was on fire.
Okay. I wonder how they knew that, though. Like, I mean, other than, you know...
How does bread come out of the earth?
Wheat.
Oh.
Right.
I wonder how people, like, knew that...
Volcanoes.
Hot springs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And eighth grader science. That's why I learned it. All right. All right.
Science is in 10th grade.
All right. All right. Anything in the 8th grade I learned well because I flunked the 8th grade. I'd take it twice, all right? All right.
So don't feel bad, Josh.
Yeah. All right. Verse 6, the stones of it in the place of sapphires and a dust of gold. There's a path which no fowl knoweth, which the vulture's eye hath not seen. The lion's whelp have not trodden it, nor the fierce lion passed by. He putteth forth his hand upon the rock. He overturneth the mountains by the roots. He cutteth out the rivers among the rocks, and his eye seeth every precious thing. He bindeth up the floods from overflowing, and the thing that is hid bringeth forth the light. Think of the underground caverns and rivers and things and all the great wonders God does under there and the paths that he's making. Every once in a while, they'll find these things. I think there's caves in Kentucky. They say go for hundreds of miles in actuality underneath the ground. No. It goes on and says this. Verse 11, he bindeth the floods from overflowing, and the thing that is hid bringeth he forth the light. And where shall wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? Man knoweth not the price thereof, neither is it found in the land of the living. The depth say it, it's not in me. The sea say it, it's not with me. It cannot be gotten for gold, neither shall silver be weighed for the price thereof. It cannot be valued with the gold of Ophir, with the precious onyx or the sapphire. The gold and the crystal cannot equal it, and the exchange of it shall not be for jewels of gold. No mention shall be made of coral or of pearls, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. Okay? So if you want wisdom, you can't just go pay money to get wisdom. Okay? Wisdom doesn't come with that. The topaz of Ethiopia shall not equal it, neither shall it be valued with pure gold. Whence then cometh wisdom, and where is the place of understanding? See, it is hid from the eyes of the living, and kept close from the fowls of the air. Destruction and death say, we have not heard the fame thereof with our ears. God understandeth the way thereof, and he knoweth the place thereof. For he looketh to the ends of the earth, and seeth unto the whole heaven. To make the weight for the wind, he weigheth the waters by measure. When he made a decree for the rain, and a way for the lightning, the thunder. Okay? Then did he see it and declare it. He prepared it, yea, and searched it out. And unto man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom.
What does he mean by fowls of the air?
Birds that fly. Okay, that's a good question. If you didn't know, that was a way to find out. So the thing is, where can men get wisdom? Not by any of that money whatsoever. Rich men are going to have it. In other words, for him to lose all his wealth didn't mean that he lost his wisdom. Okay. What is wisdom? The fear of the Lord. Okay. Fear God, that's how you begin to get wisdom. Okay. All right. To depart from evil is understanding. How do you know when the kids begin to understand? He starts departing from the bad things he does, okay? And, you know, some of us were embarrassingly older ages before we started departing from that stuff, okay?
Isn't that normally the case?
Too often the case. I don't know if it's normal. All right. 29, Job continued. Moreover, Job continued his parable and said, "Oh, that I were as in months past, as the day when God preserved me." So now he's looking back at the old days. Because remember, he was the greatest man of the East. He was a wealthy man. And he's going to describe that. "When his candle shined upon my head, when by his light I walked through darkness." Let me tell you something. If God's going to use you, don't be surprised if at some point he steps in and destroys you. Okay? And knocks you down to nothing. And breaks you in 1,000 pieces. He's doing that with Job. And when that happens, you wish it was back like it used to be. Okay? Then it says in verse 4, "And I was as I was in the days of my youth, when the secret of God was upon my tabernacle, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were about me, when I washed my steps with butter and the rock poured me out rivers of oil." In other words, I just had, you know, riches. I had everything I needed. Okay? "When I went out of the gate through the city, when I prepared my seat in the street, the young men saw me and hid themselves, and the aged rose up and stood up." And I don't doubt that. Okay? He's a very great man. And, you know, aged men stand up. Here comes Job. Young men are ashamed, you know, and step out of his way. Verse 9, "The princes refrained talking and laid their hand on their mouth. The nobles held their peace and their tongue cleaved to the roof of their mouth. When the ear heard me, then it blessed me. And when the eye saw me, it gave witness to me. Because I delivered the poor that cried and the fatherless and him that had none to help him." In other words, people came to me for help and by golly, I was there to help them. Okay? "The blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy." But think of this thing of Jesus Christ on the cross. Remember, these people, they're mocking and laughing at him, and he raised their dead and took care of them and all this. So you see where that's also a parable? Okay.
But in this case, isn't Job forgetting God gave him the ability to do all that?
Yeah, he's certainly not bringing it to mind, well, you know, all right. Then he says, verse 14, "I put on righteousness and it clothed me. My judgment was as a robe and a diadem. I was eyes to the blind and feet was eye to the lame. I was a father to the poor, and the cause which I knew not I searched out. And I brake the jaws of the wicked and plucked the spoil out of his teeth." So he worked as a judge, okay? And, you know, a lot of times people look back at Bible times and they say, boy, they were so crude. But I want you to imagine, there's a book that my sons and I have read, and it's called 1 Second After. And it's a story, hypothetical story, about an EMT attack upon the United States. You say, what's an EMT? Electrical magnetic attack. Mm-hmm. Right now, North Korea keeps 2 satellites in geosynchronous orbit above the United States for no purpose. Everybody assumes that they're for an EMP attack. What would that do? It puts an atomic explosion up in the atmosphere and blows every single computer. If you have a car from 1980 on, it'll never run again, okay? No telephones will work. All computer systems down. The electrical system in the United States shut off, okay? You're not going to communicate with people. Cell phones aren't going to work. None of that's going to work. If you had your iPhone down in the cellar, it'll probably still work. Won't attach to anything, but it'll probably still work. If you had it in the house, it won't work anymore. Okay, that's what's called the EMP attack. And The United States government is very prepared for those. They have things in underground bunkers prepared on that. Congress has done extensive studies about it, what it would be like. So the book, One Second After, talks about that, what it would be like. And one of the things that happens is, imagine suddenly, within the first... Remember what it was like when COVID came out, trying to find toilet paper? Okay? And imagine if something like that went on, where the stores aren't going to get restocked. Okay? Trucks aren't going to run. They're just broken down the highway. You can walk out there, all the airplanes are just falling out of the sky. Okay? And we're not talking something imaginary. That's something that's out there right now that everybody knows nations can do to each other. So the thing is, what would happen then? Where would you get your food? Well, we hunt. Okay? Let's say everybody in Allegheny County starts hunting. How good do you think the hunting's going to be? Okay? You know, then the best people are going to be at it. What's going to happen to the Amish? Mobs out of Buffalo are going to try to come and steal and take everything they have. And so people, after a while, they had to organize. What would be a volunteer fire department suddenly has to become a militia unit, fighting, protecting people, keeping things going. What do you do with someone who won't obey? What do you do with them?
You kill them.
You have to kill them, okay? You don't have anything else you can do. This is the days these people lived in. What could you do with a person who would not do it? Ban them, send them away. Can you keep them away? No, you can't. Then you find out some widow's been raped and had her throat slit, you know, on the edge of the community because the guy's living out in the woods, came, stole everything she had, and no. So the thing is, they had laws what you did with that kind of people, and Job was such a judge who, you know, broke the jaws of the wicked and, you know, and handled that kind of thing. Yeah. The idea that we put people in jails, that's a luxury today, okay? The idea that, you know, you can take a guy and put electric, you know, a bracelet on him or, you know, to monitor him, those are all, you know, luxuries today. The idea that you can call the police and have them come out with guns, those are all luxuries today. They didn't have it in those days. In those days, if your husband couldn't carry a sword and couldn't fight for himself, you were in trouble, okay? He had to be able to defend his land, and, you know, and the neighbors had to be able to work with him to defend their land. And, you know, you'd see strangers coming up off a hill and everybody's worried and, you know, what's going on now? And that was a danger sign. And so these are the ages that Job lives in. Because I hear some people criticize, oh, they were bloodthirsty in those days. Go read the history of the American frontier. Okay?
Yeah.
You had to be in those days. All right.
Especially with people more... you know, 100 miles away, there was no way they were getting...
There was no way. That's right. Verse 18. Then I said, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. So when those days were going on, Job just thought, you know, I'm going to die here. My days will be wonderful. It's just the most wonderful life in the world, he's thinking. My root was spread out by the waters, and the dew lay all night upon my branch. My glory was fresh in me, and my bow was renewed in my hand. Unto me men gave ear and waited and kept silence at my counsel. After my words they spake not again, and my speech dropped upon them. 29:23. And they waited for me as for the rain, and they opened their mouth wide as for the latter rain. If I laughed on them, they believed it not. And the light of my countenance they cast not down. I chose out their way and sat chief and dwelt as a king in the army, as one that comforteth the mourners. So he's showing you how powerful a man he was in those days, okay, where everybody listened to him. All right, he's somebody that, you know, that his counsel is just accepted by all. Now look at chapter 30. But now they that are younger than I have me in derision. They like going by him and laughing. Ha, 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 look at Job sitting there and all covered with scabs. And all right. And then he said, whose fathers I would have disdained to have set with the dogs of my flock. All right. And, you know, in other words, you know, it's, the lowest people on earth now walk by and mock me. Yea, whereunto might the strength of their hands profit me in whom old age was perished? For want and famine they were solitary, fleeing into the wilderness, in former times desolate and waste, who cut up mallows by the bushes and juniper roots for their meat. He's about to describe what we have on this earth, people who are primitive, who live hand-to-mouth, hunter-gatherers, okay? Why are those people like that? Because at some point or ever, their tribes were cast out. Okay, they're not more stupid than us or anything else, all right? You can take someone like that, take one of their babies, raise them here, and they're as smart as anybody in the world. For whatever reason, their people were cut off from others, and that's where they were, okay? The idea those were cavemen, we have cavemen living to this day. It's not that cavemen were way in our past, all right? You can find great civilizations 5,000 years ago and cavemen today.
Caves would be a great place to live.
Well, yeah, cave would be a great place.
I live with a caveman.
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. All right. By the way, anybody know what a mallow is?
It's a plant.
It's a plant, okay? Well, you know where that comes from? The mallow is a common plant around here, okay? They actually came from Sweden, and they think they came on the Mayflower. But they dig up the roots and make a confection out of them, and therefore they're called marshmallows. That's where that comes from, all right? All right. It used to be in these days when you had, like, your Captain Crunch and everything, there were no marshmallows in it. And then the Mayflower brought the mallows over, and that took care of it. All right.
Oh, Lord, that's about a bad word.
All right, verse 5. They were driven forth from among men. They cried after them as after a thief, to dwell in the cliffs of the valleys and the caves of the earth and in the rocks. And there's people like that to this day. Among the bushes they brayed. Under the nettles they were gathered together. They were children of fools, yea, children of base men. They were viler than the earth. And now am I their song? Yea, I am their byword. All right? These people, as low as can be, all think I'm lower than them. And now I am their song, I am their byword. They abhor me, they flee far from me, and spare not to spit in my face. And this goes back to this thing again, be nice to everyone you know on the way up in life. Because they're the same ones you meet when you're on the way back down. Okay? I've taught my kids, if you go to a restaurant, if you can't tip 20%, don't go out to eat. Okay? Why? Because that person's waiting on an ask with, all right? They're waiting on you, all right? You take care of them. And, you know, if somebody pumps your gas at a gas station, give them a dollar bill, all right? If it's Christmas time, give them more, all right? Take care of people like that. Be kind to everyone you can. Be kind to everyone you can. The lowest people you know, raise them as high as you can. And if things do fall apart for you, they'll mourn. They'll feel bad. But if they one time get the feeling that you think they're lower than you, oh, do they dance when you fall, all right? That's the greatest thing in the world. You lose your job or something happens to you and it's just, oh, such glory that such has happened to you. All right. It goes on and he says this, verse 11, because he hath loosed my cord and afflicted me and hath also let loose the bridle before me. So why are all these people mocking me? Because God's done this to me, okay? And in that sense, yes, he's allowed the devil to do it. Verse 12, upon my right hand rise the youth. They push away my feet, and they raise up against me the way of their destruction. They mar my path. They set forward my calamity. They have no helper. They came upon me as a wide breaking in of waters, and the desolation they roiled themselves upon me. Terrors are turned upon me. They pursue my soul as the wind, and my welfare passeth away as a cloud. And now my soul is poured out upon me. The days of affliction have taken hold upon me. My bones are pierced in the night season, and my sinews take no rest. By the great force of my disease is my garment changed. It bindeth me about as the collar of my coat. In other words, his clothes are actually sticking to him. Okay, that's that thing going back to Jude again. Even despising the garment spotted with sin. In other words, you go to somebody that's got some horrible thing, imagine with their garment and all the pus and the things on it, and he's saying, that's what I'm like here. Alright. He goes, and he says this about verse 19, he hath cast me into the mire, and I'm become like dust and ashes. I cry unto thee, and thou dost not hear me. I stand up, and thou regardest me not. Thou art become cruel to me. With thy strong hand thou opposest thyself against me. Thou liftest me up to the wind. Thou causest me to ride upon it. Thou dissolvest my substance. For I know that thou wilt bring me to death and to the house appointed for all living. Howbeit he will not stretch out his hand to the grave, though they cry in his destruction. Did not I weep for him that was in trouble? And this is a good thing to pray. You know, if you ever find yourself where everything's really falling apart, and it's just as awful as can be, remind the Lord of things where you help people like you, okay? Remind him of that. I always go back to a time, when I was still in Bible college studying before I even went to Vermont, and we had a guy come in from Texas to the shop that I worked in, and I remember him coming up and saying, I know how to do this stuff. We repaired window screens and doors, and you know, and he said, when I talked to him, he said, I just need 2 or 3 days of work. And it's summertime, sure. Let him come and work. And I noticed that every break he kept going out in the back, and I realized his whole family was sitting in a car in a hot South Carolina 95 degree day in a back parking lot on the asphalt while he worked. And I realized that too late. And so it's one of those things that I'm trying to find, you know, gosh, what can I do for him? I'm going to get him a motel room, anything that I can do for this guy. Well, it turned out he left early that day. They paid him, we were paying him by the day. He left early, and I searched all over town for him, looking for anywhere that he might have been. No cell phones in those days. And I mean, it was late at night before I finally gave up. And he came back the next morning, and I said, man, I looked all over for you. And he says, you know, I said, I finally found an aunt that lives here and a place to live. But I mean, I'd searched through the night. So a couple of years later, we were in Vermont, and everything fell apart on us, and we didn't have a place to stay, and it all fell apart. And I reminded the Lord. I reminded him, I said, you remember what I did for that man. You remember that I spent almost the whole night looking for him, trying to find, I did not want him living in that condition. And you know what? God answered my prayer that night. And this is the same thing Job's doing. He's reminding God and saying, hey, you know, when a person was in that trouble, I took care of it. Nehemiah does that. He says, Lord, remember me. Remember the good that I've done. You don't brag to other people about it, okay? I don't walk up, hey, Ronnie, I want you to know that I've done a lot of good things for people, all right? You don't do that. But it doesn't hurt to go to God and remind him of it, okay? Job did it. Nehemiah did it. Randy?
So where do you draw the line on that, of reminding him and not blurring it with self-righteousness?
If you're in deep trouble, throw it at him. All right? Don't drive him nuts with it, but remind him of it. And then leave it alone. All right?
Okay.
All right. You find yourself crying and disappointed, remind him of the time you let Joshua your dolly. All right? All right.
What?
All right.
What?
All right.
You can have it back wherever it is.
Yeah. All right.
I'll keep my blankie.
Verse 25 again. Did not, hey, I asked Katie, you know, she spilled my coffee. I said, well, then can I hold your dolly? She said, no. All right. So verse 25 again. Did not I weep for him that was in trouble? Was not my soul grieved for the poor? When I looked for good, then evil came unto me. And then I waited for light, there came darkness. My bowels boiled and rested not. The days of affliction prevented me. That boiling of the bowels, I think everybody understands that. Your stomach just churning. And, you know, you can go through stuff and it'll give you the runs as quick as anything you could eat. All right? You get your bowels so tore up with that stuff. All right? Verse 28. I went mourning without the sun. I stood up and cried in the congregation. I'm a brother to dragons and a companion to owls. Okay, my skin is black upon me.
This dragon thing, you got
to elaborate on that.
Yeah.
In other words, what did Jesus Christ say? I am a worm and no man, a reproach of men and despised to the people. He says, you've brought me as low as the dragons, as the owls. Owls were hateful creatures. All right, you've actually brought me down to a demonic level. Okay. Jesus Christ said, I am a worm and no man, a reproach of men, despised to the people. Okay.
So, like, some of the movies that they show dragons, it's actually not a myth that there was actually more than one dragon back then?
Yeah, there were dragons. Okay? There's dragons today, the Komodo dragon. All right?
Okay, Pastor, to be fair, normally when you think dragon nowadays, you think of giant flying lizard in the air. There was.
Okay? And that's where Leviathan is. And he's still there.
The Bible,
Taryn?
There technically is a flying dragon, the gliding lizard.
There you go, the gliding lizard, yeah. All right?
The Bible talks about flying fire-breathing beasts.
Okay, the thing is, it says, is not that Leviathan something God made to play with? Mm-hmm. Okay? Yep. You ever play with a dog?
Have you not seen me with Scruff?
Yes. Yep.
Wait, so...
We hang pork chops around Randy's neck so the dog will play.
I'd probably do that if it would get the dog to play.
Wait, so God has his own, like, pet?
Yeah, that's what it says in the Psalms.
Huh.
All right. All right, then he says this, verse 31, my harp also is turned to mourning, and my organ into the voice of them that weep. All right, I'm full of sorrow. There's 31, or chapter 31. I made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? Now, to be honest with you, fellas, that's a good thing to have, all right? So if you have a wife, make a covenant with your eyes. You don't need to be looking at the young ladies or whatever else. If you're an older fella, then, if you're a fella that's not married, that's what I mean to be saying, it says treat the younger women as sisters, okay? Until such time as God shows you that it's proper to change from that attitude, okay? Don't be running around every girl, you know, like a dog panting.
You know a guy like that?
Yes, there's too many like that. Yes. All right. Verse 2. For what portion of God is there from above, and what inheritance to the Almighty with on high? Is not destruction to the wicked, and a strange punishment to the workers of iniquity? Doth not he see my ways and count all my steps? I have walked with vanity, or if my foot have hasted deceit, let me be weighed in an even balance, that God may know my integrity. He's saying, look, if I've done wrong, let God weigh it, let him take care of it, okay? If my step hath turned out of the way, and mine heart walked after mine eyes, and if any blot hath cleaved to mine hands, let me sow and let another eat. Yea, let my offspring be rooted out. So he said, look, if I've done this wickedness, good. When I sow, let others eat the food. Let my offspring be in trouble. And he's saying, I haven't done that stuff. You're accusing me of it, but I haven't done it. Okay. Then he says, verse 9, if my heart hath deceived by a woman, or if I have laid wait at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind unto others, and let others bow down upon her. All right? In other words, let my wife cook for others, and other men take her to wife. All right? For this is an heinous crime. It is iniquity to be punished by the judges. Okay? In other words, he's saying, look, if a woman's deceived me, and I've gone after somebody else's wife, then let somebody take after my wife. He says, that's just a heinous and an awful thing. You know, one of the sad things is there's nothing sweeter and nicer in life than love. It's just a wonderful thing. And the sad part is the rules of our society today are such that love breaks down all over the place. People weep, people cry, relationships don't last because nobody follows anything with good sense, okay?
Right.
You know? I've talked about that thing before. Give two twin boys each a brand new car from the factory, the exact same model, everything else, the exact same mileage on the odometer, and explain to each one of them how to handle that car. And I remember when I got the only twice have I ever bought a brand new car, and I remember each time changing the oil at 1,500 miles because sometimes there's a little metal shaving still in the engine. And you change it early and you get those out of there, and there's all these things you do to break that car in, and for the first, 1,000 miles, certain ways that you handle things, and you do it that way, and you rotate the tires every so often, and you change the oil, and all these things you do. And one of your sons, he does that. The other one, out of the driveway, peeling out, dust all over the place. You know, he's going to probably have a ball for 2 straight years. Okay?
Maybe.
Yeah. But 10 years later, the other one still has a car that's working. He can afford it. The other one's on his 4th car by now. And it's the same thing with young men and their bodies and their love lives. Okay? There's a way to handle it. You want to break those rules? You're going to weep. You're going to cry. You're going to be depressed. You're going to be in agony. Okay? And never mind whether that's moral, okay? If there wasn't a God, it would still be stupid the way people handle stuff, okay? It would be stupid. Indians in the Amazon River Basin know better than to live like Americans, okay? Aborigines in the desert of Australia know better than to live like Americans. Inuits in Alaska, you know, the Eskimos, they know better than to live like Americans do. They know better than that. They know that hurts. They know it drives you crazy. People have known that through the centuries. It's like, we're scientific. We can live any way we want. Yeah, that's right. So you have to take tons of antidepressants right. to get through a day, all right? And you're miserable and children by this guy and that guy and everything else and miserable. Yes, sir? Is that your problem? Go ahead.
I've suddenly forgotten about that.
Very good. All right, here we go.
They got memory pills for that, too.
So he goes on and he says this. Verse 12, for it is a fire that consumeth to destruction and would root out all mine increase. If I did despise the cause of my manservant or my maidservant when they contended with me. In other words, he had hired servants, and when they came and contended with him, he did not despise their cause. Okay? He listened to them. Okay? You know what? When people are underneath you and you have authority over them, listen to them. You don't have to do what they say. But consider what they say. Let them know, I've considered what you've said here. I disagree with you. And you know what? Later on, if it turns out they're right, you can go to them and say, hey, turned out you were right. All right? Doesn't that be a big pride thing? All right. Verse 14. What then shall I do when God riseth up and when he visiteth? What shall I answer him? Did not he that made me in the womb make him? And did not one fashion us in the womb? In other words, the same God that made me made my manservant, my maidservant. If I have withheld the poor from their desire, have caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel myself alone, and the fatherless has not eaten thereof. Now look at this in parentheses here. For from my youth he was brought up with me as with a father, and I have guided her from my mother's womb. In other words, he took orphans in. Or men servants and maid servants. Okay? When they came into his house, maybe he brought them as maids or whatever else, or servants, but he handled them like he was their father. Okay? He handled them that way. They were part of his household. And then it goes on and it says, verse 20, if his loins have not blessed me, and if he were not warmed with the flame of my sheep, with the fleece of my sheep, if I have lifted up my hand against the fatherless when I saw my help in the gate, then let mine arm fall from my shoulder blade and mine arm be broken from the bone, for destruction from God was a terror to me, and by reason of my highness I could not endure. If I have made gold my hope, if I have said to the fine gold, thou art my confidence, if I rejoice because my wealth was great and because mine hand had gotten much, if I beheld the sun when it shined, or the moon walking in brightness, and my heart had been secretly enticed, or my mouth had kissed my hand, okay? This also is an iniquity to be punished by the judge, for I should have denied the God that is above. He said, I never made gold my God. I didn't go out and worship the sun and the moon, and I didn't do that stuff, okay? And he's right. He didn't do that stuff. If I rejoiced at the destruction of him that hated me, or lifted up myself when evil found him, neither have I suffered my mouth to sin by wishing a curse to his soul. There's that thing again. Don't do that to people. No matter how much somebody's been to you, don't wish a curse to somebody's soul. If the men of my tabernacle said not, oh, that we had of his flesh, we cannot be satisfied. The stranger did not lodge in the street, but I opened my doors to the traveler. If I covered my transgressions as Adam by hiding mine iniquity in my bosom, did I fear a great multitude, or did the contempt of my families terrify me that I kept silence and went not out of the door? Oh, that one would hear me. Behold, my desire that the Almighty would answer me, and that mine adversary had written a book. He's calling God his adversary there. By the way, Job, God did write a book. We're reading it. All right. Surely I would take it upon my shoulder and bind it as a crown to me. I would declare unto him the number of my steps. As a prince would I go near unto him. If my land cry against me, so that the further furrows likewise thereof complain, if I have eaten up the fruits thereof without money, or have caused the owner thereof to lose their life. Let the thistles grow instead of wheat, the cockle instead of the barley. The words of Job are ended. Well, we've seen Job. Finally, his friends have come to him. Again, Elihu is going to explain why this happened. To hide pride from him. Oftentimes, God doeth these things with man to hide pride from man. Okay, that's the bottom line with God. In it all, Job was brought pretty low. Okay, he lashes out. He becomes self-righteous. He wants his friends to know this isn't done for any evil in my hand. And it really wasn't done for any evil in him, other than God's going to find pride in him. And he did find pride in him. And how many times have you heard me say that when you're looking for pride, don't be looking at the real successful person. I'm not saying they don't have pride, but oftentimes the lowest person has more pride. That bum on the street, try to help him. No, no, you know, he's okay. He doesn't need your help, you know. And I go back to this thing of riding old bus number 19 when I was a kid in Machias. And you know, you'd see the star football player get on. I'd think to myself, gosh, I'll bet he's full of pride. You see the star cheerleader get on. You think, boy, she's full of pride. And I learned later, no, it's the skinny kid in the back, all full of pimples and everything, you know, that nobody likes. He's so full of pride, you can't touch him, okay? And this is the condition Job gets himself in. And God's going to cure that. Yes, sir?
Just to kind of go along with that a little bit, remember the last day of Youth Week, I remember this sticking out to me in particular. Brother McVeigh simply said, those who have nothing are critics. So it kind of reminded me of that way.
Yeah, that's right. You know, my kids have all heard me say this. It really came about back in the late 1980s. I moved back to South Carolina. Turning that off. But back in the late 1980s in South Carolina, I went back and took my old job back that I had before I'd been ordained. And my boss had a son who was about 20 years old who, to be honest with you, had always been kind of spoiled. I remember him having like great fancy. I remember one time him drunk wrapping a tree or a car around a tree. And then he'd go into great elaborate lengths to hide, made it look like somebody else had done it. And the cops knew he was the one, but they couldn't prove it and anything. And so in the years I was in Vermont and came back, he'd actually been put in a mental hospital at one point. Just a rich kid that couldn't find any focus in life or anything. And so when I got back and I was working, he came into my office and he just said to me, he said, you know, the happiest time of my life is when you taught me how to work. And he said, could you find a way that I could work again? And I said, sure. And so at that time, we were manufacturing a mobile home skirting, shipping into Florida and along Myrtle Beach and Charleston and things. And the county we were living in just made an ordinance that every mobile home had to have mobile home skirting. So, wow, we're a manufacturer of it. So I began to put ads in the paper and told Ed, you know, you go out and you buy the stuff from us, put it up there. We're going to make a profit off you. Well, his sister decided that somehow he was ripping the family off. She started a bitterness with her father, and his father came and shut him down. Nope, you're not going to do that. So I said, all right, Ed, then you're not going to do it as a company employee. You just become a customer. I'll sell you the stuff. Well, the first week, and this is 1989, he made $1,500, which would have been in the company coffers, and he'd have made about $400, and the company would have made about $1,100, but his sister, who wouldn't look at the figures or whatever, and I remember him coming to her and saying, boy, thank you so much, Rebecca. I made $1,500 this week. And the thing is, he really began to work. I mean, he worked night and day, began building decks and everything. Next thing you know, he's hiring guys. When I left in 2020, he was paying men $100,000 a year to work for him. But they worked 80 to 90 hours a week, okay? And they would go out there, as many mobile homes as they could skirt and as many decks as they could make. They had a certain amount of money they made on each one, and they would just go out there and kill themselves to make that money. And he was making, can imagine what he's making if they're making that. And, you know, next thing you know, he's built a house down in Charleston. He's renting it out, and he's got investment properties all over. And again, in a lot of ways, he's my baby. You know, this is, you know, and one of these days, one of his guys said, "Well, Ed, if I had your money, here's what I'd do." And I got in between them. I said, "You know, wait a second. That's exactly why you don't have his money. Because if you had his money, you'd do exactly what you're going to do. The reason he has his money is he doesn't do what you would do." All right? And I've seen a lot of people go out and make $1,500 in a week and then get drunk for 2 weeks. All right? Just fall apart. You know what he did? He lived on almost nothing. You know, he lived like a poor man at thrift stores, everything else, investing all his money. Next thing you know, he became very wealthy. Then it within 5 to 10 years became very wealthy. But it's that idea again, they that have nothing are criticizing him. Here's what I'd do, here's what I'd do. And the whole point is, he didn't do what they do, and that's what the difference was. But if you have nothing, it's real easy to criticize people that have a lot, okay? You know, if I was Donald Trump, I would do this. If I was Joe Biden, I'd do this. If I was a senator, I'd do this. If I had this, I would do that. You know, try to do something with what you have. All right, become something what you have, and then maybe you can make the next step up. All right, Ronnie Skolt, would you close us in prayer?
Father, Lord, we're thankful that we're here this evening, Lord, and we're thankful for the knowledge and the wisdom that we just obtained from your word. Lord, I pray that you would keep that with us, that it would be in the front of our minds, and that we would be able to live a better life because of the word that we have heard this evening. Father, I'd like to help Chelsea right now, Father, that you'd be with her in the hospital, and be with Nate. They won't even let him in the doors to be with her. I